TheOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
That's big news, Bobby McKenzie's reporting.
What do you suppose Lou Lamoriello has said to John Tavares to perhaps be able to convince him not to test free agency?
Well, I've won before. I built a core in New Jersey that was just unbelievably good, and we need players like you to build the same core here. You're our number one guy. I could see, Lou Lamoriello being very persuasive, and then talking about how he helped architect the re-energized Toronto Maple Leaf roster. And I could definitely see how he would, be very, very convincing. I think the hardest part of this whole thing, and I said it before, is that you really don't know where you're playing. And that's going to make it hard maybe for other players to want to come there. I'm not talking about draft picks. I'm talking about free agents. If John Tavares stays there, their team's well on its way to getting better. They obviously need goaltending help, and they definitely need help on defense. But their team is just so much better if John Tavares stays there, obviously.
And if you were John Tavares, what questions would you have for Lou Lamoriello?
I would want to know what's the timetable on the rink. I'd want to know his philosophy in terms of what type of coach he wants to hire. I want to know his philosophy and the style of game they want to play. I want to know whether they're going to spend to the cap. I'd want to know a lot of things. Maybe I don't ask those questions. Maybe my agent does. But I would want to know those things. I would want to make sure that I know how stable the situation is going to be long-term there if I'm going to sign basically away the rest of my career there.
Yeah, and if that happens, then he's got Lou Lamoriello I'm talking about. If Tavares signs before hitting free agency, then you know that Lamoriello's got to have something up his sleeve.
You would think, but I don't think he can have a rink up his sleeve. And I think that's one of the most important parts of this. If you don't have a rink, you don't have an identity. They need a rink. They can't be wayward nomads playing between Brooklyn and Uniondale. That's not a conducive way to build a brand. They need a rink.
Yeah. The rink they're playing in was made for basketball.
And concerts.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for concerts. The effects there are amazing. They are. And I have never been to a basketball game there, but I've heard that it's a phenomenal venue to watch basketball. It's a hideous place to watch hockey. It's terrible.
Pierre, this kind of reminds me a little bit, and I know that John Tavares is at another level than Shane Doan, but kind of what happened with Shane Doan, I know it was later in his career too, but he's like, I'm staying with this, and he had a couple decisions along the way if he wanted to move on or not, and he just stayed with the Coyotes. They never had any assurances about buildings or future, and I just feel this is the same way for Tavares, and I just don't want it to end up for Tavares like it did for Shane Doan.
That's a very fair point. The only difference I see in it is that knowing Shane, Shane's got a son who's a tremendous hockey player, and he's a big family man. And I know Shane didn't want to move his family and uproot them all over the place. I don't believe John has any children at this point in his life. So that's the only difference. And I think that's one of the things that led to Shane's loyalty to the Arizona situation was his loyalty to his family. Loyalty to his hockey family and being a proud guy saying, I'm going to start where I finished, even though he really started in Winnipeg. And then when the franchise moved, he moved with them. But that would be the only difference I would see.
Sean Campbell's third favorite player of all time, I think. Am I correct? Third favorite player?
Ilya
Kovalchuk.
Over the next 2 weeks where it's just going to be one of those days where there's a domino effect. And I talked about this on Insider Trading, the Kovalchuk situation is kind of holding some stuff up. Like, I think the Jeff Skinner trade is being held up a bit by waiting to see where Kovalchuk decides to go, because I think there's some overlap in terms of some of the same teams interested in both players, right?
From Pierre LeBrun's final appearance with us until next training camp, Pierre McGuire. And today in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, has expressed interest in Ilya Kovalchuk. Always looking to improve our team. We're like all teams. He's 35. There's risk involved, but he could be Yager. He could start slowing down at 41. Or he could come back and hit the wall. You never know. So we know St. Louis. We know Boston. He's met with L.A. and San Jose.
Rangers.
And there's, of course, the Rangers.
I think the only team that won't talk to him will be New Jersey. I think everybody else will at least give the wheel a spin, except for New Jersey. I would not discount Vegas. I just wouldn't. But I, you know, again, I think closer to the tri-state area, whether it's New York Rangers, Boston, obviously is close by. Islanders, even though I have a hard time, even though Lou's there, and Lou's really fond of the player. Lou Lamoriello really is fond, and maybe that's one of the things he said to John Tavares. What happens if I get you Kovalchuk? That's a pretty good running mate. And those guys would make some serious music together. They would. They would be tremendous together. So I don't know. I mean, this is. I think St. Louis is an outlier. I'd be very, very surprised. As far as what Pierre LeBrun said, there's a lot of merit to that. But I can tell you that one of the teams that is interested in Skinner has zero interest in Kovalchuk, even though they'll probably talk to him. They have zero. That's not the direction they want to go.
Because of age.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, almost a 10-year age difference, Sean.
Yeah, well, that's the difference, and they're prepared to make a bigger deal with Carolina, the team that I'm talking about. Now they just have to get Carolina to want to agree to it.
Pierre, what about if money's not the end of the world for Kovalchuk, and he probably wants term more than cash, and he's made a lot of money, he's 35 years old. What about friendships? Like, what about links to players he's played with before and you know, outlined circumstances for a Washington and Ovechkin and a Radulov in Dallas?
A lot of the – fair point, too. But if you remember now, he's 35. A lot of the guys that he played with over time, Danny Heatley being one of them, those guys are done. Once you get past 32 in this league, it's a lot of your best buddies are done. The guys that you broke in with and played with for a long time. So I don't know how legitimate that is. I think it'd be more the style of player for Kovalchuk in terms of what type of player would I be playing with, what type of system would I be playing in, who would be the coach, you know, what's the coach's relationship with Russian-born players, things like that I think would matter more to Kovalchuk than maybe some of the other things.
All of this horrible news surrounding Hoffman in Ottawa, could that increase the bounty potentially for Jeff Skinner or maybe for Max Pacioretty if he's on the market?
Well, you're talking about Skinner being worth more than Hoffman? I follow you now. I got you. It could be. I don't think the Hoffman thing plays much into Pacioretty. They're two totally different players. One's more of a power forward. With really good size, and the other one obviously is smaller. Hoffman's not a big guy, and Skinner's not a big guy. They're more the same. So I don't think it affects Pacioretty's situation as much.
All right.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, though, Rod. It's a fair point. The one thing that Montreal's got to wrap their head around, their demands at the trade deadline for Pacioretty, nobody was doing what they were asking for. Not even close. I talked to one team and said, there's no way we're doing that deal. They're just asking for way too much.
Which was their prerogative, right?
Absolutely. But it's also the other team's prerogative to say, no, we're not doing the deal. So if you want to trade the player, you kind of have to have a happy median.
All right, we promised. You want to add something before we throw
no,
some names?
No, we can move over to the draft.
To the draft, yeah. Sean
no,
and Tony.
Go wherever you want. That's one of the beauties of the show. We don't rehearse it. It's not scripted.
Yeah, but we promised you all week, and I know you've been.
No, I'm talking about next week, too, if you want.
Well,
if you want to talk NHL stuff, talk about it. It's okay.
Well, this is kind of NHL stuff, and it gives us another chance to mention that Sean and Tony will be here a week from today when you guys are in Dallas. Mitch Gallo will be in Dallas, Sean and Tony in studio, yep. Friday night and Saturday morning.
Dan Robertson as well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Daniel, good. Yeah. You had a good show. You had a good group of people there.
You've already told us how much and why you like Brady Tkachuk, like a lot of people.
Yep.
Others have pointed out that Zadina is the best pure goal scorer in the draft. And yet others, in fact, Bob McKenzie's podcast today, that came out today, what's it called? The Bobcast?
Yes.
He said that it would not be going off the board. Considering how fast Kotkaniemi, the young Finnish center, seems to be rising among a lot of scouts that he has spoken to, some of whom even would rank him ahead of both Tkachuk and Zadina.
Well, that could be. I mean, Bob talks to different scouts than I do, but definitely Kotkaniemi is moving up. There's no question about it. I told you yesterday of two fast risers, Noah Dobson and Evan Bouchard, both defensemen. So it's a bit of a different situation. Another guy that I know has got a lot of street cred with scouts is Oliver Wahlstrom. He is a beast. He is a beast.
That's the kid that Tony mentioned today, right? Sorry, Pierre. Tony mentioned him specifically on the scrum today.
On Wahlstrom?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he is really starting to climb. I've seen him play a lot. And, you know, he's a kid that was committed to Maine. He's not going to Maine. It sounds like he's going to end up at Boston. Or, sorry, committed to Harvard and looks like he's going to end up at Boston College. But, no, he's really tough. He's big. He's fast. He's very skilled with the puck. He can really score goals. That's his thing. He's a pure goal scorer. And not far removed in terms of scoring, pure scoring ability from Zadina or Svechnikov. But here's the one thing. This guy's got a little bit angry to him. He's a little bit tough in a good way.
I like that. I like that in a player.
Who doesn't?
Pierre, I know that Dahlin's at number one on defense, and you mentioned a couple guys like Bouchard and Dobson climbing the ranks.
Yep.
If you were to pick a number two defenseman in this draft, in that clunk of other defense from Hughes, Boquist, where would you go?
Probably Bouchard. I like his size. I like his mobility. I like the fact that he gets points. He gets lots of points. He can run a power play. He can shoot the puck. He can really skate. He can break the puck out. He's a guy that I think, you know, anybody that comes out of the London program is really prepared for NHL hockey. That's just the mindset of the people that run it, the Hunters. So I would probably lean toward that direction. But Dobson's tremendous. He had an awesome Memorial Cup. I mean, he's a really, really talented kid, and I think he's got major upside, huge upside.
He's 6'3". So when you have, like, for defensemen that we're talking about, when you have a number of them kind of scrunched together where there's not much difference,
right,
how do you split the difference as an organization?
Well, I would say character. You know, some guy might be a tremendous point producer, and maybe his character's not as good. Maybe the guy gets less points and blocks shots and is more fearless, and maybe you see him having a better career because he can do more to help you win than just get points. So there's a lot of different things you're going to, you know, the skating ability of one guy over another guy. One guy might have cement shoes but has tremendous character. The other guy might have really light feet and can really move. So there's a lot of different ways. You know, we haven't even talked about Bodie Wild yet. He's another one.
Oh, hold on, Pierre. I was getting to that.
Okay.
Because last weekend on Weekend Game Points with Matthew Ross, guess who his guest was in studio?
Yeah, my favorite guy to watch, Zach Werenski. A very calm, poised kind of, you know, offensive defenseman. Him and Tortorella used the term rover to describe his game, where he's almost somewhat of a midfielder. I think that's a style of hockey that I can play.
There you go. So now you can tell us more about Bodie Wild.
Well, he's another one that looked like he was going to go to Harvard and is not going to Harvard. He is an elite puck mover, I will tell you that. He's got maybe... He's probably the closest player in the draft to Scotty Niedermayer. And I go way back to watching Scotty when, you know, back in 1990 and 91 before he was a pro player and a third overall pick. Scotty Niedermayer was something else playing with Daryl Sador with the Kamloops Blazers. And I haven't seen too many guys like him. This is one that's similar. I wouldn't say he's as good because obviously Scotty's a Hall of Famer, but there's a lot of similarities in their game.
The college route next year, it's University of Michigan for me, which is pretty exciting, having grown up there and seeing a few games when I was young. The first college games I ever saw, the first time I heard about college hockey even being a thing when I was 12 or 13.
Cool uniforms, too.
Yeah, the only team I knew about was Michigan. And of course, yeah, the uniforms, that the Block M and the Maize and Blue. I'm excited.
Yeah, Bodie Wild. Sounds like he's 45 years old already. With Matthew Ross on Weekend Game Points last weekend, and that's another storied program.
He'll be playing with Quinn Hughes. If he goes to Michigan, which it sounds like he's doing, he'll be playing with Quinn Hughes. He'll probably be picked right around when Bodie Wild's picked.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Mitch.
I just wanted to ask a little more about Quinn Hughes, who's an undersized defenseman, which doesn't mean as much now as it did just a few years ago, correct?
I've known this family forever. His sister went to my his mother went to my hockey school way back when I was working at Babson. She ended up being a really good player at the University of New Hampshire. The father played at Providence College, was a real good defenseman, a mobile defenseman, Jack. Jimmy Jack's the brother. Jimmy was tremendous at Providence. Quinn had a good World Junior. He had a real solid year. It's hard to be a young player in the Big Ten, especially where Michigan plays, and get almost a point a game, and he was able to do that. He's somebody that I think, a lot like your Victor Mete in Montreal, there's a lot of similarity there in terms of the size and the way they play. Just for Montreal fans to have an appetite for what Quinn Hughes is about. His brother next year, there's a real chance his brother will be the first pick overall next year. Hmm.
So how do you resist? We're going back to the Finnish kid, Kotkaniemi, who is rising. We all know, the whole world knows the situation with this franchise down the middle of the ice.
Yeah.
If they have him ranked below a player that is available, if they are in fact holding on to that number three pick overall, what do you do?
I think you probably have to take the centerman. It depends on how they view him. He is one of the fastest climbers, I would tell you that, along with the two defensemen that I told you about in Bouchard and Dobson. But I would want to see who's going at two. You know, is Svechnikov going at two? Is Zadina going at two? Is Tkachuk going to go at two? Everybody knows Dahlin's going one. If I were Montreal, I'd want to see what's happening with two. Did two get traded? Is there a chance that I need to do something else? Can I maybe get two picks in the top 10 if you're Montreal? You know, there's a lot of different things you got to look at. Because there'll be a couple guys sliding, depending on who goes at two. There could be somebody that goes off the board at two. I don't know.
When you're picking near the top of the draft and you're looking at a prospect, do you kind of just project that he is going to reach the top of his game? Like, or do you kind of consider maybe the best case scenario doesn't necessarily play out and he turns into something a little bit less than what you may project, but that could also be very good? Like, how do you deal with what a player could look like in 3 or 4 years from now?
Well, I think it's always really prudent to get the best guy you have on your board when your pick's available. But there's sometimes you're just so intimately aware of a player. I'll give you an example. Ian Moran, if you go back and look at the 90 draft, I think we drafted Ian in the 6th or the 7th round when I was in Pittsburgh. And a lot of teams laughed at us for taking him because they said he won't even play in the league. He played 11 years. But the reason why we were able to take him is I had the kid in hockey school probably 2 or 3 years. I had watched him play a ton. I knew his character, and I knew the type of person he was. You know, it shows you, he was a partner with Mark Bergevin in Pittsburgh when they played together in Pittsburgh. But sometimes teams, scouts know players a lot more just because they've had a lot of experience with the player in different environments, and they trust that player is going to evolve and develop. So there's so much that goes into it, Rod. There really is. I'll give you an example. I think there's a guy rated in the second round, probably the middle part of the second round, that I think is pretty close, not 100%, but pretty close to being a first-round pick. And I'd be willing to bet, if he doesn't get hurt, he'll be a captain of an NHL team. His name is Jack Drury. He plays for Waterloo in Iowa. He plays in the USHL. I know his coach really well. I went and visited their team last year. I spoke to their team. I coached this kid's father. His uncle's the assistant general manager of the New York Rangers. He's grown up in a pro hockey environment. He's a tremendous talent. He was playing in the USHL as a 16-year-old. That is an amazingly difficult thing to do, unbelievably hard thing to do. And so he's right now rated by the scouts as a middle-of-the-road second-round pick. If I were a team that knew him as well as I know him, I'd be trying to get an extra pick early in the second round because that's a guy I want because I know he's going to play and I know he's going to be a captain of a team someday if he stays healthy.
Well, Montreal has an early second round pick, just to throw that out there.
I'm just telling you, he's one of the guys that I think is not getting nearly enough acclaim around the hockey world in terms of the scouting list.